Dun, dun, dun. Here they come. There's this great game out for Christmas right now. You can buy your niece or nephew or children, if you have them, called Skylander Swap Force. They're little action figures. You put on portals. They come into the game, and you play them. My boys want it. I just know about it. But one of the things they do is you buy these traps you put on there, and you can trap people in there. Pharisees are totally trying to trap this guy right now. Right? You're welcome for that. Who's got little kids? Who's with me? Anyone? Ryan, you got little kids? Here comes a trap. Sneaky, sneaky Pharisees. They are they don't like it. Remember chapter 12? This thing tipped. He really opposed them. He moved out to the streets. He started talking to the common folk. And they came up to him and tested him. Like, what you going to do with this one, Jesus? And is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? And that culture, just like it in our culture, divorce was a hot topic. Two major schools of thought from two rabbis, Hillel and... Hi, ladies. How's it going? There's no shame. We're talking about Matthew 18. You come in here. It's all right. I know. Nope, we're going to have Rochambeau. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot for the Bible cover. Sister battle for the holidays. So here's how it goes. You face each other. Rock, paper, scissor, and then you throw it. Best two out of three to make it really interesting. Come on. Buck's been really waiting for this. He's emailed me in the past 2 weeks like 15 different scenarios. If somebody doesn't make coffee hot enough, can they have the Bible cover? All right, we won't do two or three. We'll just do one so we can move on. And there's no shame and guilt. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. One, two, try it again. Rock, paper, scissors, then throw it. One, three fist pumps. Rock, paper, scissors, throw it. The one... Celeste, you win. You win. You can fight over it. Here, we'll just make it... We'll make it fair and equal and balanced. You can rotate it as often as you see fit until the next person... I'll let you, Matthew 18, figure that out since we just went through. All right. So he's going to answer them now, and we're going to get six things about marriage that are important. Now I've super sped ahead.
You said two schools.
Hillel and Shammai, or something like that. I don't know how to say his name. One was more liberal than the other. And it's all going to come down to a word for both of them that we're going to look at here in just a little bit. Come on. Go down. Computer. I'll tell you what they are. Shammai or Hillel. Okay? And it's kind of the same idea as a conservative or liberal when it comes to sex ethics, because they're going to get down to a word in here that they're going to look at. He answered them, okay, this is, what do words in red mean in your Bible? Simple question.
Jesus.
Awesome. Here's how he's going to answer them, and we're going to see six things about marriage that Jesus believes. This is one of the primary passages in this whole conversation of divorce, but even particularly marriage. You're going to get some high views of what Jesus thinks about marriage. He answered, have you not read, what's he talking about? If Jesus says, have you not read, what's he referring to that's put down on paper? Yes, the first five books, particularly Genesis. Genesis 1:27 to 24. Have you not read that he who created them, who are the them? Adam and Eve, male and female. From the beginning, made them male and female. Okay, first thing, marriage is, I don't want to use that word, designed by God. It's not an institution society thought up.
What?
I like you, Elliot. We could have robust lunch conversations.
Okay? It's designed by God. These guys are coming to trap him. They're coming to say, what do you think about this? You know, there's a big debate in culture about divorce and sex ethics. What do you think, Jesus? First thing he says, it's designed by God. From the beginning, he made them male and female. Okay? Marriage is meant to be complementary. I don't even know if I spelled it right. There's probably a T in there. Complementary. Complementary. You can take the T out. Okay? Male and female, he made them. It's not a unisex world. It's not a same-sex world according to God. He created two. He created one in the image of himself, and he said that it was good. He said the only thing about it that wasn't good is that you're alone. So he put that guy to sleep, literally reached into his body, took a rib, breathed life again, Ish and Isha, man and woman. Okay? There are times, even to the most compassionate of scenarios right now, that you hear about in culture as you're listening as a pastor, that you want to be sensitive. But I can't get away from the origin. I can't get away from the beginning. And it doesn't make me better to say that. It just makes the reality of what God did the reality of what God did. Okay? Male and female. And he said, spoke, that same creator who in the beginning made them male and female, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Number three, marriage is meant to be permanent. This is where he starts pushing on their trap. Okay? In its design, in the garden, it was meant to be permanent. When you join two things and they become one, it's now one thing. You don't unjoin them. Okay? They are no longer two, but one flesh. So there's a permanency to it there. And that's a God-designed thing. It's exclusive. He's united with his wife. Okay? What God has joined together, let no man separate. So, separate. Can't spell or talk today, all right? It's permanent. It's also exclusive. It didn't say man to his wives, okay, to his one wife. It's united to his wife. He becomes one flesh with her. there's the leaving and cleaving, that you're leaving the care of a father, okay, and a mother. So that means it has something to do with society. One of the phrases out there today, it's a nuclear part of society. Some would argue that it is the foundation on which societies are built. Not a constitution, not a belief system, not a democracy, not a whatever. That the way really good civilizations work in the context of God-designed history starts with the family. Okay? I personally will fight for these things for the rest of my days, and it will be a fight for the rest of my days. How I fight matters, how I talk matters, what I believe matters, how I train my boys. I'm telling them right now, he's 8 years old. The other two, 4 and 2, they're just playing. I look at Cooper and I tell him all the time, buddy, people are soon going to tell you you're crazy because you think differently than them. And they're going to make fun of you because you think differently than them. And you're going to feel small because you're standing up for something big. We need to have that too. This is God's design. This is not a Christian's battle because we want it to be right. This is God's thing.
Yes, sir.
This is God's thing, okay? And we're not jerks about it. We don't hate people. You're even going to see grace in this passage here later on, okay? Marriage is nuclear, so that there's a leaving and a cleaving. There's something new that's created. And then 10 through 12, we're going to get on because there's another thing we see. But you see the five things there in his first argument, okay? Verse 7, Buck, read that one. Stinky Pharisees again.
Why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and to send her away?
Trap Master's here, trying to get him again. All right, Mr. Leave Cleave and Have One Flesh. Why did Moses allow it? And here's a good thing. And this is we can turn into hyper persister people that love to have the authority of God as it's our own when we talk to people, and we get really fired up and ruffled to be like, I'm going to have this super strong opinion. The only person who really gets to do that is God himself.
Yes, sir.
Do not pick a fight with him about what he designed. And you're going to get responses like this. Lee, I don't believe Jesus was sarcastic, though I love and have the spiritual gift of sarcasm. So I would love to say this is a sarcastic response, but it's not. It's actually authoritative. Lee, verse 8 and verse 9.
He said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery.
Oh, so why did Moses... See, this is now Jared Rumley International Version. Why did Moses allow for a certificate of divorce? Because of your hardness of heart. That's not what he did. I think he did subtly. Right? Your hard heart. You stubborn people. That's why he did it. There was grace there. He allowed something because you're stubborn. And from the beginning, it wasn't so. So he's going back to that original design. It wasn't like this. It wasn't supposed to be like this. It never was supposed to be like this. Malachi talks about God hating divorce. If you've ever hate something or loathed something, you need to know that's how God feels about divorce. And I guarantee you, if I asked you who came from split homes right now, half the room would probably raise their hand. I'm not judging you. I'm not telling you. And if you've ever thought it was your fault, okay, just send that thought outside and just say, go away. Go away. Okay, it's never a kid's fault, ever. Never, ever a kid's fault. Question? I want to say 3:8, but now I got to... Somebody, hey, use your gift of your googly, Jeremiah.
I
was going to say 3:8, but it is 2:16. Yeah, Deuteronomy 24 is where the passage of Moses talks about writing her a certificate of divorce. Okay, if you want to write that down as a cross-reference. Jesus says it wasn't that way from the beginning. That's important. Okay, because when, what was chapter 18 about, the end of chapter 18? Relationships. And but what's he doing in 14 through 20? What did Jeremiah write up there? What's 14 through 20, the P word? Okay, he's talked about relationships. He's preparing these disciples for something. We cannot lose what happens in verses 8 just to look at verse 9. The church historically has now facing and dealing and running into verse 9 all the time. But we have to remember verse 8. And in a society where you're trying to help people make decisions, and I can tell you, and any of you in vocational ministry, I can tell you this one is as complicated as it gets. There is not an easy, sweeping, overarching thing you can just drop and it say, this fits for everybody. I can just tell you that. Every single relationship we enter in on a case-by-case example, because it's so complicated and there's so many nuances. But what we want to see at the heart level in all the relationships that are dealing with divorce is verse 8. That's what I'm looking for any time I sit down with a couple. Okay? Again, I told you about the 10 o'clock today. I want to see verse 8. And they don't want to see verse 8. They want to see verse 9. And it's our job to restore them and raise the higher value of what God wants. Okay? It's not supposed to be that way. It's not supposed to be that way. And that's why it's the most critical decision you ever make. For those of you that are single, do not run into marriage willy-nilly, free-thinking with unicorns and puppies. Okay? The notebook may tell you a great kiss will make you seal the deal. I'm just telling you, it is the most important decision you'll make in your life outside of accepting Christ. And to do that, theologically, we believe God warms your dead heart. So let him warm your ring finger up for that person, right? It's just not worth it to think everything's going to be okay and to run into it. Now, some stories are different. I met, dated, engaged, and married within 1 year. I don't recommend that for everyone. I was rolling the dice in a little bit, but I also know this. I made a commitment in May of 2002. And if I rolled the dice and it was a 7, that's my fault. And I still got to live up to what I said I do to in May, right? But it's not supposed to be that way. So you step into this thing. He says, I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and that is the point of contention, and marries another, commits adultery. So you have you have some both issues of divorce and remarriage. Paul, 1 Corinthians 7 is going to be something we'll cross-reference as well. What you need to know, these are generous graces provided in a situation that's tricky, but the ultimate value is that it doesn't separate, okay? Whoever divorces his wife, okay? So take the except for sexual immorality aside. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. Why? Yeah, I mean, there's more than just sexual intimacy. I mean, it's easy to think that's what does it. But I think one flesh joins a lot more than just the physical parts of man and woman. I think there's a spiritual deep connection. I think there's an emotional deep connection in root. There's obviously the physical. If you just, when I'm talking to Cooper, who's 8 years old, about basic anatomy, it makes sense for him. And sometimes we need to think like that child. We'll see the faith of a children here in a little bit. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Like, oh, that's actually really cool how God designed that. Huh, that's how they go together. Oh, that's cool. So you divorce and you remarry. It says from Jesus' mouth, you commit adultery. What it also did he take adultery to all the way back in chapter 5? Okay, let that sink in for a little bit. Because a lot of people pride themselves in marriage. I've been faithful. I've totally been faithful. I have never had sexual intercourse with another person that wasn't my wife. Man, so much more than that. Because we read the Bible in the context of the Bible. If he says, if your heart looks at a woman lustfully, guess what? If you ever looked at a magazine cover or watched Entertainment Tonight as you're flipping channels and saw something and thought in your mind, oh, that's pretty. You see some dude without his shirt off running on the beach, and you're like, those abs are washboard type. Okay? Welcome to the club.
Yes, sir.
Let's just be honest about that. It's nothing we're proud of. It's nothing that we gloat. But in a sexualized society, it is very difficult to get away from this and very difficult to get away from what Jesus raised it in Matthew 5-7. So we got to fight it. And if we move on and literally marry, leave, cleave, and become one flesh with another, it says you commit adultery. Can I just say something here? And this is not my favorite thing to say, but it's true. Adultery and remarriage after divorce is not the worst thing you can do. Okay? Right now, there's a couple things in the Christian world that if you do, fellas, if these ladies knew that you struggled with pornography in here, I mean, you're blacklisted, right? In a marriage, you see that with guys, they feel this total shame and total like, I've committed the ultimate thing. Yet, if mama leaves and goes to Starbucks and just slanders that guy and gossip girls about him, whatever, it's like, this is kind of what women do. Can we be clear that sin is sin?
Yeah.
And we all need grace.
Yes.
And we all need to be restored. And so that if somebody comes from a divorced background, we need to wrestle through all those things and why we need to be responsible, but we need to let the grace that God gave expand to them as well if their heart is truly for him. Okay? Now, can I tell you this? Fight. Fight for your marriage. Everybody just writes it off now because you can. I'm so tired of hearing irreconcilable differences. And you didn't know what you got into. There's a great book out there called What Did You Expect by Paul Tripp. For if you're going to be married or hope to be married or in married, read it. Because he sets it off right away. He goes, I can tell you who the biggest problem in your marriage is. And he points at both of them. What Did You Expect by Paul Tripp. He is a surgeon a counselor, a surgeon with the word. He gets right to your heart. He writes in such a way that you're just, he's got a high view of God, a high view of the scriptures. And it changed our life group. It changed our marriage because of the scriptures it brought out and us trusting it. That he says, what did you expect when two sinners got together? There's this idealism of what marriage is like, and it's not. It's not. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. And then I had kids, and now parenting is the hardest thing I've ever done. That you want so badly these little, selfish, sinful creatures to do what you want. Why are you hitting your brother again? And then you have grace because you're like, oh, I'm still kind of work in progress. Why am I still doing that thing? Why are you, you know? It is not easy, people. Okay, it's not easy. Question. Yeah, Ephesians 5. Sure. I mean, what length did Christ go for his bride? Of anybody in history, did he deserve to look at his bride and go, "You can go"? Anyone, right? I'm done with you. You've been unfaithful enough. What did he do? Hey, fellas, that's your standard. Ladies, you looking for a guy? You make sure he knows that.
Yeah.
And that he lives for that.
Yes,
okay, and he's got good brothers around him that'll help him remember that. That's his job. Okay? And the good news is that death was sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever